have.
Anyone want a shot?
Did you ever see the ASMR that I got?
Yeah.
It was like the most sexual ASMR thing ever.
Ladies! And gentlemen, it's your motherfucking boy, Gamero, the Pharaoh, the poor man's Robert De Niro. You know what I'm talking about, bald version, but still beautiful. I am so very ecstatic, you know what I'm saying, to be here another beautiful Thursday at midnight, you know what I'm saying, joined by powerhouse of guests today, you know what I'm saying. But before we get to introducing the titans of industry that I have before me, ladies and gentlemen, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Go on YouTube, go on Spotify, and go on Deezer, go on Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff. But more than anything, ladies and gentlemen, you go on YouTube. You know what I'm saying? So you can see our beautiful faces. You know what I'm saying? That's why we got 72 damn cameras in here. You know what I'm saying? So go on YouTube and hit that subscribe. Ladies and gentlemen, God. How do I put into words, you know what I'm saying? When you are honored, you know what I'm saying? When you're fangirling in your own studio, what do? You know what I'm saying? I had the honor, the privilege, if you will, you know what I'm saying, of having the opportunity of seeing these marvelous, talented actors before me in this majestic production. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my absolute honor to be able to introduce, for most, the first time ever on this, the Hallowed Midnight in Miami set, and one, a second time comer on this here platform, you know what I'm saying? Ladies and gentlemen, it is my absolute honor to be able to introduce the cast of Malima's Tale! Okay. Oh my God. Guys, first of all, thank you so much for joining. Don't leave me hanging. You know what I'm saying? Thank you so much for joining me today. I truly, truly appreciate it. How is everybody doing?
Good. Feeling really good.
Fabulous.
Okay. Oh my God. Oh God. That's that little ASMR you were talking about. First of all, before we get into diving anything further, please introduce yourselves and the character, the role, what you did in this production from left to right.
Hello, I'm Jarrell Brown, and I play the role of Malima.
Hi, I'm Sydney Presendue. I played Wamwada, Rahman, Hua Huin, Alice, and a few elephants.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Yeah. Did I name all them guys? I think so.
Okay.
Cheesemate. No.
Oh, Cheesemate. Yes. Hassan. And Hassan. Yes. Oh, my all-time favorite.
There we go.
Hi, I'm Paul Torres Wong. I'm player two, and I play 8 different roles.
God.
So don't quiz me on the...
Man. Oh, man. You sound like my identity crisis. I love that. All right. What else?
I'm Philip Andrew Santiago, and I am player one, and I play about 5-6 different...
Wow. Well, first of all, again, let me reiterate how grateful I am to every single one of you for joining us today. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, it is closing weekend upon us, you know, a bittersweet moment for every single actor. Talk to me about what this production has kind of meant to you leading on to, you know, closing weekend.
Everyone looking at me?
Okay.
Well, for me, I would say it's been a very rewarding process. It's been an emotional journey, and I'm just very proud to be a part of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say it's been incredibly rewarding, and honestly, to be able to, you know, get into this production with such talented artists and to create something as wonderful as we did, it feels very validating.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
As an actress.
Wow.
And then to play all those characters.
Sheesh.
It was not easy.
I believe it.
Yes, it's actually been the most challenging role I've ever had to play, and it has everything to do with the multiple roles and different ethnicities, different dialects, playing characters from across the world. It took a great deal of research.
Right.
And but yes, it's been one of my favorite projects I've ever been a part of.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been super rewarding. One, like, kind of, we're all kind of coming back from the pandemic.
So yeah.
Getting some rust out.
Oh.
Getting back into the flow of things. So it was really helpful with that. But it was definitely like a boot camp. Like, we had a language, an accent coach.
Okay.
So it was like really challenging, but it was also super rewarding to be able to just do something artistically that one honored a bunch of different cultures.
Right.
And then also tested us as artists and stretched us.
Wow. First of all, before we even continue, can we please give it up a big shout out to Zoetic Stage? You know what I'm saying? You guys, you put on a fantastic, fantastic production. I thank you for having me. Guys, what are some of those things that kind of you had mentioned, the minutia, those little details that maybe most people don't think about? A dialect coach, you know, maybe a lot of people didn't think that maybe that was involved. Talk to me about those little pockets of research that most people don't see.
Well, we also had an intimacy director.
Okay.
To help, I know, with them, to help out with like certain fight moments, not necessarily fight, but, you know, a slap here and there.
Okay.
Grab. And for me, it was mostly about touching everybody on the face.
Oh my God.
That was very interesting. And then also our movement director, Herman Payne.
Okay. Big shout out.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, Herman was great. He definitely helped me as well with my characters. Because I play a few men in the show.
Okay.
And that was a challenge in itself.
All right.
But he really, like, guided me and guided all of us in a really great direction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was that a first time for you or no?
To play men?
Yeah.
Professionally, yes.
Okay.
First time.
Was it a big challenge? Was it not what you expected? Talk to me about that.
It definitely was a challenge at first because I play multiple men.
Okay.
So they all have to be different from each other, have something that's distinct,
right,
you know, that makes them them. So I feel like as the process was going on, each week I was able to find something new about one of the characters.
Wow.
That I felt like made it be like, okay, this is him. Like, and especially with the costumes as well.
Right.
When I put my glasses on, Hassan was unlocked.
Okay. Oh, man.
A new level, which made it really fun.
And it's so true. You find out something new every week. Sometimes you just want a production to run for like 72 weeks. You know what I'm saying? And the first weekend character is a complete different person from the last weekend, from closing weekend. Talk to me about that.
Well, one of the parts of the research that I had to deep dive into is sort of understanding the characters and their humanity.
Right.
You know, the play is about Mlima and following his tusks and the spirit of his tusks through its journey from being hunted down all the way across the world through the black market. And so, in essence, no character is really clean, but as the actor embodying the character, you have to find their humanity. And so there was a lot of research and understanding, you know, the issues that face Africa and Kenya in particular, and the root of the real demand for ivory,
right,
which is rooted in Asia.
Wow.
So I think part of, I guess, the process of going through and understanding each character, it was very, like, not difficult, but in a sense it was challenging to make sure they were all different and we weren't playing caricatures.
Right.
I don't think I pronounced that correctly. Caricatures of people. Actually, one of the first conversations we had from day one was, you know, considering the political climate and things going on socially, was that we're being asked to play characters that are not our own ethnicity.
Right.
So we had to toe this line of
that, like, was something
of doing accurate accents and even physicality that wasn't necessarily stereotypical. or something that would be offensive to other cultures, but honored them, but at the same time showing human flaws of how everyone is kind of, everyone has blood on their hands.
Mm.
So just trying to make sure you balance all of those things, I think was probably the biggest challenge of making sure, you know, I wasn't being offensive because that wasn't any of our hearts or desires,
right.
But also showing, hey, every single human in this piece plays a role in what goes on with Lima.
Was anybody nervous about offending anybody?
Absolutely, I was.
Yeah. I think, especially as we were learning the dialects and going through it, because a note that we got was to go as far as we can and then pull back. And you're kind of scared to go as far as you can because you're like, okay, well, that doesn't really sound as like unstereotypical as I could make it.
Right.
But I think as we got comfortable in all of our accents and dialects, it definitely just got into our bodies. Because I mean, I can say for everyone, they all sounded really great.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Thank you. One of the saving graces, I think, is really the brilliant writing of Lynn Nottage.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she wrote three-dimensional characters. So it really helped keep us out of any sort of stereotypical mode to in portraying the characters. Because they're real people. They're humans, you know, and from different parts of the world. So I think we were rooted in some good dialogue that kept us grounded.
Speaking of Lynn Nottage, everybody, kind of give me your perspective or your point of view when you first when you read the script for the first time.
So, the first time I read the script, I saw more than just an elephant. I saw parallels of just being a black man as well.
Wow.
You know, because back in the day we had to go through slave trade, so it was also, it just reminded me all of that, of just like people being ripped from their families to satisfy someone else's needs for greed.
Mm.
So, but then as I kept going through the process, I started finding like other things that I could relate to as a human being as well. So I just didn't think of, oh, it's just about an elephant, but it's about many other things.
Mm. Wow.
I would say when I first read the play, I saw like a relay race, and just seeing it getting passed, the tusks getting passed down from person to person, from group to group, it just, I don't know, it kind of felt like one big game. Mm. And I guess I was just thinking about how we are going to put this up, and my imagination just kind of went all over the place, which was fun with this play because I feel like Lynn gives you so much. She gives you the beauty of the elephants and the beauty of Africa and also all these other countries that we get to explore. So I don't know. I feel like I was just thinking about everything.
Okay.
You know?
Wow.
Well, one of the fun things about the show also is our director, Stuart Meltzer.
Right. And big shout out to Stuart Meltzer. You know what I'm saying? Come on.
And this is the first time I've worked with Stuart and have experienced his directing. And he is a real believer in keeping a high energy, hard charging, you know, pace for all the characters. And keeping the energy up and finding the humor where there can be in such a serious story. And so, you know, and the way he did the staging and the sort of his unique set design by Michael McKeever and this minimalistic style of having two essential runways. And there's a conceptual idea of having the actors only travel one direction through it, where we had to then, when we changed characters, had to run around. It's one of the most athletic shows.
Oh,
I've ever
man.
Been in. I mean, I was just telling my castmates,
yeah.
when I study my lines,
it's like P90X out there. Oh man, it's real.
I study my lines on a treadmill.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Because I had to get my cardio up to be able to handle like the transitions. No kidding.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So and that was actually quite helpful. Should have been
Well, as far as when I read the play, if you're familiar with Lynn Nowitzch's work, she's really good at taking big issues. She's really good at taking big issues and then bringing a microscope on it.
Okay.
So intimate apparel, sweat, like these are things that sometimes even people have forgotten about.
Right.
Big issues that were once a big thing in society, and then we kind of moved on to something else. She's really good about going back and then taking a microscope and showing little pieces of those things. So she, like, I think this play is exemplary of that. Like she really does go into detail on everyone's experience. And one of the things I noticed because of one of the characters I play, you know, everyone ends up getting blood on their hands, so to speak, in this play.
Right.
One of the characters I play, Fu Guoxi, he's a journalist, diplomat from China, but his reasoning for wanting to be involved with the Tusk is sentimental. It's nostalgia. So just something as personal as that, where we can get on our high horse and be like, oh, you know, the ivory trade is so horrible, and it is.
Right.
But there's reasons. Everyone has reasons. Not excuses, but reasons as to why they do things.
It really humanizes them.
Exactly.
Wow.
And speaking of Lynn Nowitzch's structure, you know, in reading the play for the first time, you if you ever get a copy and you look at it, it lists Mlima, player one, player two, player three, then it has like over 20 characters throughout all the different scenes.
Wow.
But the playwright, Lynn, Ms. Nowitzch, doesn't assign who plays what. It's actually at the discretion of the director. Mm. So it's sort of a choose your own adventure directorially.
Wow.
On who plays what. And so it's one of those things where Stuart was able to decide on who he wanted to play which role. Wow. According to their talents and gifts and all those things, and then the blend and the ensemble. So
wow. Yeah. So you guys could have played any of the other roles then.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I play a woman at one point.
Yeah.
And you play what, four men?
Yeah, like, four men.
So. Wow. So wow. What was some of the more challenging aspects in having to play so many roles? How do you give each one differentiating characteristics and human traits so people can make that distinction? Whoever, jump in.
I would say for me, it was about figuring out what my characters wanted and why they wanted it so badly. Mm. And then to look at their behavior, because I can tell by, you know, some of my characters that greed fills them, and they like the flashy life. Like, I feel like that was Hassan's character arc, and kind of finding things that match that with the body. I would say physicality is what helped me so much get into my characters.
Okay.
And making them all walk different, move different, have like certain tics to them. I think that was really fun in exploring those things, because I feel like in the quick time that we have to change backstage, because we're literally like ripping clothes off.
I believe it.
Exit. It's like just getting, finding something, you know, to get into it once again. I think that was really helpful for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I think for this process, I kind of took kind of that same approach. I made sure like outwardly first before kind of finding intentions and stuff. Although that was, obviously we had to do that. But finding out their accents, how they stood, how they walked, who they were, what their cadence was,
right,
was definitely helpful first to like differentiate all of them and how they would appear on stage, and then kind of searching, okay, why do they want this? What, you know, because I felt maybe if I just simply went by intention, I might end up playing me.
Right.
Every single one of those.
Yeah.
Sentences. I wanted to get their accent, their physicality first, and then like, okay, let's fill this in.
Okay.
Yeah, now for me, so one of the tricky challenges was three of my characters are all Chinese. So how do you make three distinct characters when the dialects could be potentially very similar to each other? And so I try to break it down further in terms of, you know, what is their education? What is their age? What is their position in life? Whatever that means, you know, and sort of look at them from that viewpoint. And that helped tremendously. So that even though you may have sort of similar dialect, you still have some distinctive character traits that make them, you know, individuals.
Right. How was the rehearsal process for you guys? I feel like sometimes people always wish that they had a week more. Sometimes, you know, they did all right with the time that they had. Was it how was tech week for you? I know there was even a little bit extra research when you guys went to the zoo, if I'm not mistaken. Why don't you guys talk to me a little bit about that?
The rehearsal process was, I enjoyed it a lot. It was my first time working with Zoetic Stage. So that already was an experience for me, like working with a different theater company. The rehearsal space, we had the runways taped off so we can just practice the length and going. And It was just different because I'm used to doing musicals a majority of my career. So like going back into straight plays was like, it was scary for me at first, but I got really comfortable because Stuart like made the environment super comfortable. You know, these actors, I've worked with some of them before and some I haven't.
But... I can see the excitement in your face.
But it just, I had a great time working with everyone and just also like watching the process and just imagining what the end goal was going to be. Oh. I was just so excited about it. And then we went into tech and I did miss a few days of tech because I got sick.
Oh.
So I was like really bummed out and I was like, oh, I want to be there. Mm-hmm. I want to see what's happening. And then like when I could, I was just like masked up and I'm like, I'm here.
I remember. I had texted him. I was like, oh, happy tech week. And you're like, I'm sick. How about you?
The rehearsal process was definitely exciting. This was also my first time working with Zoetic.
Okay.
My first equity show.
Wow. So, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Yeah, I was definitely excited. And Stuart definitely made a very comfortable space for all of us. Because I feel like he knew the gravity of the play and the amount of work that all of us would have to do to get to that end result. And he was always making us feel, you know, comfortable, making us laugh, you know, us making each other laugh and helping each other out with the accents. And just, it was very quick for all of us to get really acquainted with each other, mm-hmm. which felt really relaxing and like took the ease off, I mean, the whole rehearsal time, because it just felt like fun.
Right.
And we can just like jump in and like create. And tech week was so cool. Like I found myself just like standing and like looking around as the lights came together,
yeah.
as the sound, as the projection. And I'm just like, wow, like this is so cool.
Yeah.
And just being like, wow, like I'm here. That's so
yeah.
cool.
Oh, yeah. The Mama, I Made It moment. I had mine too. Oh, it happens all the time and it's beautiful. Talk to me.
Well, I mean, rehearsals are never long enough, right?
Oh, of course. Yes.
And yet, you know, we definitely were able to work with Stuart and he had created a very safe space for us to take chances and take risks. And, but the play itself though is very demanding. I must say.
Oh, yeah.
And so we did our very best to squeeze as much as we could out of our acting rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into tech and it was just like days of us, you know, stand there. and it was tough. And then when we finally returned to it, then we had to hit the ground running and just start running.
Yeah.
And so there was definitely pressure there. Not imposed, but maybe self-imposed.
Because okay.
We all cared so much about getting this right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we could, I think, all feel how important the show and this message and the play and the playwright. And, you know, and certainly this, it was a huge opportunity for me to be able to work at Zoetic like that at the Arts Center. So.
Is this your first time?
Yeah. I did a reading for the Finstrom
Yes.
For Zoetic under Gabriel Salgado.
Prior guest, you know what I'm saying? Big shout out.
Yeah. the play was called The Public Execution of the American President.
Okay.
By Nick Valdez, a very talented up-and-coming playwright. Mm-hmm. And so I guess in a way that was my audition to then lead into this role. I think we pulled it off. I mean, it was
most definitely, guys. Yeah. Most definitely.
Thank God.
Wow.
Well, this is also my first time working with Stuart, and I had worked with Zoetic also at the Fincher Festival.
Okay.
Meetings there, I've been, I've always wanted to work with them, and it was great to actually get an opportunity to do so. Stuart was great, and the entire crew about from jump, making sure we understood it was like a place where grace was in that environment. So we were free to explore, free to figure things out, free to say, hey, I need help in this area, like things with lines, making sure we were getting our accents right, movement. So Jenny Hacker was our intimacy choreographer. So she was really great about also like one helping us, manage those things whenever we had to touch each other or move around. And just from jump, it was very much a, we understand there's a challenge, but at the same time, we're going to like meet each other so that we can do this together and get there.
Wow, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, every single week, you know what I'm saying, we have three, I said, three segments. And the first one is the mail time. You know what I'm saying? I stole that shit from Blue's Clues. They've been off the air for a couple years. So here we go. In this beautiful segment, we ask our illustrious powerhouse guests questions that you yourself have sent in via social media, via IG, you know what I'm saying, via the DM, slide in on the DMs, and here we go. What was the biggest hurdle you encountered while taking on this production?
It was a really bad rainstorm.
Really?
Like tornadoes and stuff.
Sheesh. Oh, I thought you were for real. No. I was like, okay. Everybody huddled up. Miami, the show must go on.
But Tadra came in. Tadra was our, Tadra Brunson. He was our understudy for all of us.
Okay, there we go.
Shout out to Tadra.
Big shouts, big shouts.
Big shout out to Tadra. She had a big job on her shoulders and still does because we are finishing up our last week. But yeah, she came in clutch one day for the weather was pretty bad. But that wasn't the biggest issue, but
Okay.
The segue.
What? Anybody else?
Well, the costume changes are...
I believe it.
So there's actually moments where I'm the last line of one scene as a character and the first line of the next scene as a completely different character, completely dressed differently, all the way around the stage and then jumping on in a new costume.
Oh my God.
So that took a lot of coordination and
You have a whole 7 nanoseconds to do it. That's intense.
Lots of Velcro. Lots and lots of Velcro.
I believe it. Oh man, that's the name of the game, Velcro. Anybody else?
I guess for me, it was...
It also doesn't have to be a physical thing. Right. You know, maybe like something about your character that you had a hard time, whatever.
Yeah, I would say connecting deeply, like for each character.
Okay.
And to make sure that like I'm playing my action and like being active the whole time.
Right.
Because I feel like, especially in the beginning when we were doing our first few runs, it was hard to go backstage, change your costume, make sure you're in the right one, get everything together and then psychologically be there. I found myself getting in my head a lot.
Yeah.
And I was just like, dang, like, and I would beat myself up about it because I'm like, I want to get it right. I want to make sure that all these characters are distinct and connected. And even connecting emotionally, playing different characters, because you have to get into something, get right out of it, And then once again, you're laughing, the next thing you're crying. So it's like, That, I would say, was my biggest challenge.
Okay, okay. Anybody else?
This may sound nasty.
Oh, I love it already. That's an Instagram mini video already.
But I would honestly say touching myself.
Really?
Because my hands are covered in white makeup. And, you know, I feel like we always have tendencies to, like, you know, cross our arms or put our hands in our pockets or just, like, you know, just have them anywhere. But I have to be so mindful throughout the whole show where my hands are, because otherwise I have makeup all over my costume or on my body when it's not supposed to be, or even on stage.
Oh.
So I find myself, like, getting up like this a lot, like putting my this side of my hand to get up or in certain things.
Oh, my God. Just, so, like, you wouldn't touch anything.
Right. I find, like, but it actually helped me a lot, so I wouldn't, like, fidget.
Oh,
you know, sometimes, you know, we want to, like, do something with our hands or something all the time. Like that. So it just, like, really just helped me just, like, be in control and just also be mindful of where my hands are.
Oh, my God. All right. All right. Great answers all around. Here we go with the second question. What were some new things you learned about the ivory trade that you didn't know before?
Some new things. I feel like a lot of it was new for me. Like, I knew that there was a, you know, ivory trade going on, but just, like, the extent of it all, of, like, you know, Africans doing it because, you know, they need to feed their families. Like, it's not like, oh, we're gonna do this because we're gonna make a, you know, an item out of it. It's like, this needs to be done because we know that so-and-so is going to pay us really well if we get them ivory. I'll also say, like, finding how they would, like, hide it in a sort of sense of, like, hiding elephants' bodies or the tusk and just, like, coming back later to, like, get them and stuff like that. It's just wild.
Wow.
A little, like, tidbit that I learned about the ivory trade is that they would also sell slaves along with the ivory at times. So it's kind of like you would get a deal altogether. And I found that, like, so interesting because it's like not only do you already have to do this heinous thing and kill an elephant to get it, but it's like that trade was so dirty. You know, and so many things went on and things that we probably don't even know.
Right.
You know, the extent of.
Right.
So, like, when I read that, I was like, wow, that's really interesting.
Right.
And, like, how many things come from Africa.
Right.
Just to get used, you know, for pleasure or, you know, to be comfortable
right.
in other countries.
That's such a valid point. I mean, that's all that we know about. But imagine all the things that haven't even come to light, you know.
Yeah,
such
a
valid point.
Well, as a part Chinese person, I was intimately aware of the Chinese heritage of, you know, having ivory in the home and ivory carvings as a seemingly important cultural part of being Chinese. But I wasn't fully cognizant that just about every piece of ivory that exists represents the murder of an elephant. You know, I guess when you're not really aware of something or you're maybe choose to be a little bit in denial about it, you assume that there's some way to harvest them or farm them or something that seems reasonable. And when in fact, according to Ram Gill, statistics are showing that there's 96 elephants are being killed every day for their tusks alone. There's no other use for their meat or anything like that. They're just being killed for the tusks, and that they're tracking to total extinction in about 20 years if it doesn't let up or stop.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I feel there were a lot of things that, as you read the play, like oh wait, yeah, that has to have been happening for all this time. So, like, people who need to feed their families, and that's why they do this. People who are literally out for just the money. People who just want it because culturally significant to them. I think the thing that I
just how difficult politically it is to keep this to keep the bans on ivory. Lately, I was listening to some podcasts where they've other countries have been wanting to remove the bans on the ivory trade because it's they have stockpiles from older things or even animals that actually have died. So they're trying to find ways, some countries are trying to find ways where they can still sell off and make some profit off of those things and even use some of that profit to try and help animal causes. But the moment they start laxing those bans, then it starts becoming a bigger issue again. Elephants are starting to be killed, rhinoceros are starting to be killed. So it's this game of like trying to figure out how do we help people with economically. At the same time, this is a product that people want. There's a way of getting it when, if animals do die naturally, but you can't, trying to keep it to that has become nearly impossible. The moment you lift off any bans, people are poaching really hard.
Wow. And the last question from our mealtime segment. Why do you feel this was an important story to share?
Because unlike most other plays, they're like fictional stories, but they're like in an alternate kind of universe in some sort of kind of way. And this one has like a deeper, powerful meaning. These animals are a part of our ecosystem and like they can possibly be extinct. And it's something that needs to be done now. It's not something that we can just walk away and be like, oh, it's just a story. It's not Romeo and Juliet where you're like, oh, poor kids, they died. It's just like, no, these are elephants. Like we said, 96 a day. I find that wild.
It's insane.
So I feel like, Glenn wrote something to start a conversation, make people a little uncomfortable so they can do something about it, leave the theater, or at least have some thought about what's going on.
Right.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, hard to follow. Yeah.
So
sick.
No, I completely agree with that. And I think something amazing that Lynn does is that she gives a voice to the voiceless. And I think in this scenario, she really just made Malima a full-fledged soul. You saw his range, you saw his happiness, and you saw his despair.
Oh yeah.
And I think everybody that watches it can relate to, that feeling that Malima, whatever Malima's going through, I think someone can relate to that. And I think it just makes it more closer. I think we see animals and we're like, oh, okay, animals. Some people don't even believe that they have feelings. But, elephants are so intelligent and their memory is impeccable.
Yeah.
And I think it makes you feel like, okay, I don't want this to keep happening. And especially because there is no happy ending. It's not like a fairy tale. It's not like, oh, okay, everyone that tried to get Malima died. No, they just lived their lives. Some of them got money, and then they went on to the next one.
Right.
And so I think it makes the audience feel like, okay, like there's a pit in my heart now. There's something I want to do.
Yes.
I want to change. I want to be a part of the change, which I've heard a lot of audience members talking about, like, how can they help?
Right.
Which has been really great to hear.
Yeah, and that's something we'll get into right afterwards. What, go ahead.
Yeah, no, for me, on another note, additionally, is just the wonderful opportunity that Lynn Nottage has created for actors of color.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a very wide-ranging play with multiple characters of all different races and ethnicities and cultures. And it's lended opportunity for actors like ourselves to be able to play fully realized human beings on stage.
Yeah.
Not stereotypes. And not in, in the old days, at least my old days, they to be an actor of color, you would just sort of once in a while hope for non-traditional casting. So, you know, I've played numerous normally white roles or roles that were sort of non-specific. And so, and you know, you kind of count your blessings when you get something like that. Where in fact now, there's actually juicy roles that are, that really could be cast more accurately to who I am, you know, or who we are as people. And I'm very grateful to Lynn Nottage for creating work for us in this way, because I think it's significant.
Wow.
That's an awesome point. One of the things that I learned through this process was I love animals and stuff, I was never a huge animal lover, and I think definitely there are people who are huge animal lovers, and just the mention of this stuff kind of gets at their heartstrings. I wasn't necessarily one of those people, to be quite honest.
Okay.
But what this piece helped me understand from jump was how animals help us understand our humanity. And so, like, being able to make Malima a person, and even, you know, through us and how our characters interact, just like us, the way we treat these other creatures reflects how either callous we are as human beings or how loving we are. So it's just a reflection, the price we're willing to pay for beauty. As one of his characters says towards the end, are we willing to just destroy another creature just so we can hang something up in our homes and then thus lose a piece of our humanity? So that was like the lesson I learned and really got out of this piece, not being a huge animal
person. Right.
And I'm hoping, and we've heard people say how impactful of a piece it is. And I think that's part of it, just understanding this is bigger than just like save the whales kind of thing.
Right.
Like a typical, stereotypical, like, conservationist.
Right.
Yeah, one of the challenges for the show, I imagine, was the marketing of it.
Yeah.
You know, and what Lima's Tale is not is simply an issue play. Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually really poetic and inspirational, and it takes you down sort of the dark alley of the black market in a really kind of interesting way. And always trying to show the humanity of each of the characters, but it's not a drag.
No, not at all.
It's really a powerful show that's inspirational, in my opinion.
Of course.
And, you know, I hope the best for future productions.
Wow. Great, great answers all around. You know what I'm saying? Look at you quoting the script. You know what I'm saying? Everybody on their, you see it on the table. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's on their game. Thank you for sending in those questions. You know what I'm saying? Hit the DM every single week. Touching upon your previous answer, what would you guys say has been some of the audience reception, some of the things that audience members have told you that maybe their eyes were open to that maybe they weren't fully aware of, or maybe they were aware of but didn't know the hard facts, you know? Talk to me about that.
I just know a lot of people come up to me after the show and say, you made me cry. And I'm like, I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like it was hard to personify an animal, you know, to make this animal have human-like qualities so that people can see their reflection in animals in a sort of sense now. So when they go home, either if they have a dog or a cat or a bird, they can be like, okay, you have a soul. I need to take care of you and just not abuse you or, you know, use you for my own personal grief.
Wow.
I had a friend who came up to me after the show, and he was so angry. He was so mad because it didn't have a good ending.
Really?
Yeah, he was like, no, like, I don't understand. They're like, that's it? And I'm like, yeah, that's it. There's nothing more.
He wanted a happy ending.
Yeah, and he's like, well, it's like, how? Like, what? Like, does she need to, like, come out with a sequel? And I'm like, no, the sequel is real life. Like,
yeah.
Like, that's the chance.
That the sequel's happening right now. Right. Wow. Right. Okay.
Yeah. You are the sequel.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. What about you guys?
Well, I have a lot of family who came to see the show. So, most of the Asians you see in the audience were related to me. And they loved it. They loved it. They thought the message was very powerful. And I think within the Chinese community, there really is room for education and change in these sort of cultural attitudes. So I think that's what's the most powerful thing about the play is that it's a conduit to transmit this message in a way that people can open their hearts to and really absorb. If you were to just email articles to people, there might be more resistance to just information, but when you sort of transmit an important message through art, it somehow is absorbed, you know, in a more meaningful way that could change minds, you know. So
wow.
That's my hope.
Beautiful.
Most of the people that I've come across, like family members or friends who've come seen it, they've all realized, like, well, I didn't come here expecting to be so impacted. I didn't think I was going to start crying because, you know, you told me it was just a play about an elephant. But, but like, they really were like, wow, that was, my mom came and she was like, he made me cry. So, like, yeah, so just, I guess, my hope is that they saw not just something that had to do with conservation and the ivory trade, but also other issues. Like, she does some great writing, period, just about how, you know, the same kind of issue goes along with other big button issues in the world that are going on now. So, like, a lot of the political things that go on in the play, I hope it would cause people to think, hey, this is probably happening in this arena as well.
Right.
So I just hope that it stirred people on to think about other ways corruption happens in other places.
Of course, of course. Talk to me a little bit about some of the more technical aspects of it. This had a very different component, which you don't see very often, which is that it was a theater in the round like experience in the sense that you had the audience all around you. Talk to me about adjusting to that, giving the different audiences, you know, equal love in it. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I know Stuart, our director, was very, like, adamant about how we were going to be blocked. Mm. And just, even in rehearsal space, just making sure that we're not, like, flat on at most times, just like be angled so this side of the audience can get us at one point, this side of the audience, and then projecting loud enough that if I'm facing one side, the people behind me can hear me. So it was a challenge, but it felt familiar.
Okay.
In a sense of, like, I know you and I, we've done a lot of dinner theater.
We have.
And it was sort of in that situation where you're just like, in there,
yeah,
and you have to sort of like exude so much energy that it goes throughout the whole room so that no one feels neglected.
Oh yeah. Oh my god, yeah, that brought back a lot of happy memories.
Yeah, I definitely say remaining open and yes, making sure that, like, if one side can't see you, maybe they can see half of your face, and just projecting in that area. I know we all got that note constantly. What's the project? And we're just like, I'm being loud, I swear. But I think once we got used to the blocking with it as well, because the blocking is very technical. Like, you kind of have to be at a certain area or a certain angle because we don't want to upstage each other or block each other.
Right.
And something that I did like, though, about this play was that it was very stylized. Okay. Like, our entrances, we came in together. We would turn together. We would, you know, move when the light came on. And I thought that added such a cool element to the storytelling and to the fact that, like, we appear in so many different places. Like, it's not one setting. And I think that, like, stylized slash, like, Brechtian, like aspect that Stuart did a really great job of implementing.
Oh, yeah.
It, like, so cool.
Yes, it was very specifically blocked. Almost chess-like.
No, yeah, really.
I believe it.
That's a good way.
But once we had the foundation of our blocking, then as actors we had the freedom. I feel we had the freedom to sort of share the love as we needed. So mm-hmm. you know, you hit your mark, but then you also have to be mindful of, you know, and because the it's not even in the round. It's really more like a tennis court.
Yeah.
So you got the stage running down the center, and then audience is facing each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Towards the middle. And
or pickleball, you know what I'm saying? Everybody's that's the hot new thing right now.
Pickleball theater, right?
There we go.
So I'm cognizant. So like, you know, when I walk away from a character and then turn, I try to rotate 50-50. You know, sometimes I go left, sometimes I go right, and just be cognizant of, you know, sharing attention to each side. I've had a lot of friends and family come, and no one's complained about mm-hmm. having access or being in the bad seat. Like, the seats are all excellent,
mm-hmm.
and the way that's set up, and I think the blocking helps support that.
Yeah, right after the show, I remember telling you that at no point did I feel left out. It was great.
That's great.
My mom said that to when we were, she was, like, meeting Stuart. I was like, yeah, that was him. He made sure that we did all that.
Yeah.
Everybody got attention. Yeah. So, yeah, actually, one thing at first it felt a little restricting, because it's like, no, you got to tilt this way so that everyone can see you. On the flip side of that, at least during the run, I've gotten to understand that at the same time, there was times where, like, just, you know, there's obviously times where we can only face one section, but just our physicality can still speak to that.
Of course.
To the other side of the room. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that's something I took away from it, where it's just like, yeah, I might not even be facing them, but just something I'm doing, or even just kind of whatever energy you're sending to your characters on stage, was very, like, it was still telling, and people were still, like, felt involved, even though you weren't looking directly at them.
Very cool. Very cool. Wow.
I would say one of my favorite moments is that when I am Tusk, when I'm just standing there,
uh-huh.
sometimes I, like, glance at the audience. Just, I don't know, I cheat. And, like, if, like, for example, like, when you're, in Vietnam and you're the sailor, sometimes I just like to see, it's just funny to see the audience's heads go back and forth.
That's so true. That's so true.
And I just see it and I'm like, oh, they're in it.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know, they're literally like, oh, what you gonna say?
Oh my God.
In some scenes, we're 40 feet apart.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
On opposite ends of the stage from each other.
And in a scene, two mm-hmm. people, like, just going at it. Oh. And so the energy, it requires intense energy just to cover that area.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let alone have people hear you.
Oh, yeah. You have to have blinders on, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I noticed that one night when we were doing the show, and I just, like, my eyes looked up and I see everyone's face shift immediately towards you, Paul. And I was like, whoa. I was like, okay.
Damn. Okay. Wow. Damn. Ladies and gentlemen, you know what I'm saying? Every single week we have three, I said three segments. And the second one is actually the movie review of the week. You know what I'm saying? In this beautiful segment, we ask our illustrious guest for a suggestion, a recommendation. Let's say it's something you've been binging on, Netflix, HBO, Hulu, whatever you like, whether it be a TV show, a movie, any of the sort. But because this is a theatrical inclined audience, I'd be remiss if I don't ask you to suggest maybe a production that you are hoping to see, whether it be down here, whether it be on Broadway, whether you have a friend that's performing, if you want to do a movie and a theater, a theatrical production as well. The floor is yours.
Well, I'd like to give a shout out to Gable Stage.
Oh yes, big shout out, big shout out to Gable Stage.
We have some friends that are going to be in the next play, Heisenberg.
Big shout out Heisenberg.
And yeah, Jenny Hacker, who was our intimacy coach, yeah, is starring in it.
Okay.
Along with really a A plus.
Oh yeah.
Cast,
yeah.
For that show.
Oh yeah.
So I'm eager to see that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Anybody else?
I know Miami New Drama is opening Elian.
Okay. Okay. Big shout out Miami New Drama.
So, make sure you catch that. I'm
okay.
Seeing that.
There we go. There we go.
I don't really know any theater shows that are coming out other than the ones you guys just mentioned. I can give you a TV show though.
By all means.
If you haven't watched it already, I started watching Abbott Elementary season 2.
I've heard of it.
It is so great.
Yeah?
It's so funny, so relatable. The characters, it's wonderfully written. Like Quinta Brunson did an amazing job with that show.
Okay, what's it about?
It's about these middle school teachers. They work at a school that's underfunded.
Okay.
And so, is it middle or elementary school?
They're elementary.
I think school. Elementary, yeah, school. Yeah, yeah, sorry. Elementary school teachers, they work at a school that's pretty underfunded.
Okay.
And so they're just, you know, trying to do things for the kids. It's like predominantly Black school. But like, it's The Office style.
Oh, I love The Office, man. I have so many The Office stickers in here.
There, and like the camera crew's coming to like document the school.
Oh, it's like a mockumentary style. Oh, I love that.
And it's so wonderfully.
Oh, I'm gonna check that out.
It's great.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Out of 5 stars, how many would you give it?
5.
Oh, okay. All right.
I concur.
All right. He concurs. I'm watching it tonight. Okay. What else? Theater show, movie, TV, anything?
Okay. In the spirit of October, I love horror films.
Okay.
That genre.
Okay.
I just finished watching Halloween Ends.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Halloween Town. Great film. Halloween Town 2, Calabar's Revenge. What? Hello? Come on. Banger. Hi.
I just finished Halloween Ends.
Okay.
You know, Michael Myers, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Okay, how was
it? We were like, this is her last. She's done enough movies. I thought this was very interesting.
Okay.
I'm not going to give too much away, you know. It starts off, you know, they have like their campy moments.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, typical Halloween, like horror movies. Mm-hmm. You got to have a little camp in there before they scare
always
you.
Always going camping.
But you don't get tired of it.
But, and then I've been watching The Midnight Club.
Oh.
Netflix.
Okay.
I found it a very interesting piece. It's like a horror kind of series where these kids, they all seem to have like these problems where they're gonna die. Like they either have like some kind of disease or something like that. So they all live in this house where they're like, oh, we're just here until it's time to go. But then like at midnight every day, they would like gather around and like tell these ghost stories.
Oh.
And like, each character would like have these stories, but somehow like the stories were like intertwined with the main plot, and I found it like very interesting.
Wow. Very cool. Very cool. And how many stars would you give it out of 5?
I would probably give it like 3.5.
Okay, okay, okay. Yeah, I see you. Okay. All right. Thank you for those recommendations, suggestions, all that good stuff. I appreciate it. How would you say that the pandemic affected you personally? And how would you say that it affected your ability to perform? How long were you out of the game for, per se?
So the pandemic, I felt like, was a blessing and a curse.
Okay.
For me. I was about to do Ragtime at the Broward Center. It was Slow Burn Theater. And we were in rehearsals, and then, like, that was it. So, and I was, I guess, like everyone else, and I'm like, oh, we'll be back soon.
Yeah.
And then months went by.
Yeah.
So, but in that time, I went through a spiritual journey, self-care, and just like adopted a lot of practices that I keep with me today. So it helped me a lot just also to just look back on my career and just like what I've been doing, how hard I've been working, and just being like, okay, you need to take a rest sometimes. I don't have to do 500 things at once. But it also like made me want to know if I still wanted to do theater. And that was scary because like once theater was closed, I was like, oh my gosh, am I ever going to work again? And it just started making me think about another career choice. I was like, am I going to be a flight attendant? Like I started looking into other things. But then I just started, I guess, a lot of people just, I guess, artists are just so unique. They were just going to create art no matter what.
Oh, yeah.
So all these Zoom performances.
Oh, man.
And I was, like, hooked. I was, like, watching, like, a lot of Zoom performances or talkbacks or meetings and chats and forums. And, you know, at one point you get over Zoom. But it was just, like, that became, like, one of the norms. So I learned a lot through that, and I was also, like, teaching through Zoom because I teach dance, and I was, like, doing dance classes, and it just actually opened, like, a whole new avenue of different things and networking with a lot of different people. So that's why I say it was, like, a blessing and a curse.
Okay.
When the pandemic first hit, I was a senior at New World School of the Arts, and we were just graduating. So I remember, too, we went to New York for our showcase, and we had to cut it short because people weren't coming because they were afraid of getting sick. And I remember leaving a day early and being like, wait a minute. Like, we worked so hard to get to this one moment, you know, and it kind of just was like, never mind. So it was definitely a little hard, like, coming to terms with, okay, there is not going to be, like, a foreseeable future in acting for right now.
Right.
Especially having graduated, you know, a lot of us were really excited to just like jump into things.
Oh, yeah.
Move, do something. But I would definitely say that it was a blessing and a curse for me as well, because I was able to take that time and like go inward and figure out like, okay, who am I as Sydney? And to find like my passions for acting again. And then to really just like believe in myself again as an actor. I feel like when you're, you know, when you're in school and you have that structure of like someone guiding you, someone telling you what to do, how to do it, it's harder when now you're like on your own and like nobody knows the answer. And I think it helped me grow a lot and to like get out of my comfort zone when it was time. So I feel like when this show came up, because this is the first thing that I've done since I've graduated.
Wow.
Yeah. The last thing I technically did was my one-person show.
Wow.
And my senior project. Yeah. Yeah. So I think if I didn't have that time, I wouldn't feel as ready as I do now.
Okay.
You know, because I definitely was scared.
Yeah.
You know, of my future. But now I feel very, like, excited and, like, ready to keep going.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Of course.
Yeah, I was rehearsing a show at Boca Stage.
Okay, shout out Boca Stage.
And we closed the day of opening night. And then shut down.
It's an oxymoron.
And then and then came back to the set a year and a half later.
Oh my God.
To remount it. And it was weird because I felt 10 years older from right. when we got shut down to coming back. And then
you had to relearn the lines, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't there.
Yeah. There's no way it was going to be there.
And so it was a lot of work. But during the pandemic, you know, I just found other ways to kind of have an outlet for my, you know, artistic, you know, desire. And so I wrote my first play, wow. which actually led to some good opportunities I'm part of the Miami-Dade Playwriting Development Program now.
Wow.
Okay.
But using that first piece as a sample writing piece. So, yeah, you had to sort of, during that period, you had to really kind of reinvent yourself.
Right.
And then But then, you know, the rules change. So now, like, video submissions are now normal for theater, which was never before. Yeah. And I got Kinky Boots for the first time. It was my first time I ever did a video submission, and it got me work. And I worked with Jarell for the first time there.
Wow.
Jarell was a choreographer and actor. And, yeah, you know, sometimes when there's a shakeup, there's opportunities that kind of fall out of it. And I hadn't done theater for a long time before that Boca stage production. And so, yeah, you know, it was a time to sort of be able to reinvent yourself and really set your priorities on what you want to do. Yeah, I mean, the pandemic was terrible, of course, but, you know, some good things came of it.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
I had literally stepped aside from theater right before the pandemic happened.
Okay.
So, I, in the same way that everybody had their process, it was actually kind of helpful. And I don't mean this it's going to sound horrible, but like the pandemic helped me not have so much FOMO because things had kind of halted in that arena.
Right.
So I was able to like internally deal with things that I needed to deal with during the pandemic because there wasn't this constant like, oh, what's going on? What auditions are going on?
Right.
Like, so I was able to just be like, okay, that's not moving.
Right.
And I'm not necessarily missing out.
Right.
So
I cannot do shit because no one's doing shit. You know? Hey, man, bro.
So yeah, it was in a sense helpful. It sucked. Believe me, it sucked. It wasn't fun, but there were just things I needed to work through. Theater can sometimes be this all-consuming thing, and your career and trying, you know, while you're opening one play, you're thinking about my next job.
Yeah.
So to have kind of a halt to that, I think was at least for me a healthy thing for a time. And actually now coming out of it on the back end now, just seeing like my reason for doing acting has grown, my desire and why, way less anxiety of like having to do this if, you know, what if this doesn't work?
Right.
So just all of those things kind of like found their place and are still finding their place. But, I think that time period.
Okay. Talk to me about your experience talking or working, with Zoetic Stage and kind of what made Zoetic Stage different from other companies that you've worked with before?
I would say like the creative process of the whole thing. I'm used to being in musicals and shows where people are just doing a remount version of something they've seen before, either it be Broadway, off-Broadway, or tour. And this, I knew Stuart was very excited about doing something new and innovative. And it shows with, like, the style. Like everything that we've been doing, the set alone is different. The projections that help tell the story, the entrances and exits, it's all the style. So I found it very interesting and I loved it. I just loved the whole process. It wasn't just like a cookie cutter, like, you know, we're going to do 42nd Street.
Yeah.
Grab your cap shoes. You know what I mean? He was very creative and have all these ideas and wasn't afraid to ask us, how do we feel about it?
Mm.
And a lot of times you don't get that from directors.
Mm.
Like they'll say, do this. And you know, you're like, okay, why? But like, I want you to stand here. How do you feel about that? And you're like, I'm okay with it. Or can I stand over here because I feel my character would do this? Like, okay, you know, have a discussion about it. And that's what I love, like having an open discussion and just having someone listen to you as well and not just being like, this is what it is, do it.
Yeah, wow. I did some research on previous productions of the show, and definitely, our production is completely different than it's ever been done before.
Wow.
And And even in the casting, he did some innovative stuff. There are scenes where I'm not the Asian guy.
Right? It's right? Very so, true.
You know, you play Fu Guoxi in a scene where I'm playing a white Kenyan, and he's playing an embassy
journalist
from the Chinese embassy. And I was like, oh, so I'm not going to be the Chinese guy in this scene? And then the answer was no. So in a really kind of cool, innovative way. So even though he had a mix of people that could easily fit into stuff, he even flipped that on its head, mm-hmm. which was super fun.
Wow. 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 That's such a good point that you just made there. Wow.
Well, to piggyback what they said, working with Stuart was really great because he was really set on creating something.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get like the, specifically with musicals, like the cookie, the VBS box.
Yeah.
This theme, and we're going to be doing this show. And let's like add a little twist to it.
Yeah.
No, this was like he was creating something from the ground up.
Oh.
He wasn't going back to the old production or the production that was done at the Public Theater to remount that same thing.
Right.
He was doing his own concept of it, and definitely made all of us feel a part of that creative process. And made a, you know, but at the same time, like he was really good about even delegating things to his own staff and people within the company. So like Herman dictating with movements, and Jenny, you know, doing the choreography for some of the intimacy stuff. So it was very much a collaboration with a leader who was very much willing to listen and piggyback and discuss things and just bring it together and make this art.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it being my first professional production, I didn't really know what to expect.
I was gonna ask, you know, that first one, that equity, you know, like how was it?
It felt so relaxing. Like, wow. Because it was such a collaborative effort, I really didn't expect Stuart to, like, want for me to try my own choices and to, like, really, he's like, just try whatever. We'll see if it works. Right. If it doesn't, that's okay. You know, we'll try something else. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, so I had to, like, get adjusted to that in a sense of being like, wow, like, we really can, you know, do what our inspired action is to do.
Right.
And, it was really cool just seeing all the puzzle pieces come together because it was like something that was never done before. Even with the set design, with the way we told this story, it's just so unique.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and
my
I
God.
Think that is like such a beautiful thing to be able to create with a group of collaborative people who are on that same like creative high.
Yeah.
That was really
cool. It seems like, and this is only from, you know, a third party viewing in, but it seems like you guys had such an enjoyable creative process in the sense like nobody was judging anybody's choices. Everybody could kind of, whatever they wanted to try that day, you could try it. And that's so refreshing. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And it was nice to see like everyone's discoveries too.
Yeah.
Because like I feel like each day we all, you know, we all had our own battles, our own things.
Ugh.
And it was just, it was so rewarding to see it because it's just like, oh wow, like they got it.
Oh.
You know, and it like, it's just always such a breathtaking moment.
Yeah.
For sure.
I have to ask, I'd be remiss if I don't ask. It's one of my hard-hitting questions here, so get ready. It's by the time that this episode does air, you guys have closed. You guys did have a fantastic run, so I congratulate you on your amazing run. You guys had equally fantastic reviews, and I do want to ask, what is your relationship with reviews? I mean, here obviously it was magnificent all around, but is it something that you pay attention to? Is it something that you don't read till closing? Is it something you read as soon as it drops? Is it something that you don't speak about in the dressing rooms? What is it about? You know, talk to me.
I read them.
There you go. There we go.
I read them because I just like to know, you know, they came out, they took their time, they're there, pad and pen in the audience. So I honestly want to see what their perspective and opinion is on the show. I don't have to necessarily take it personal, but I at least want to know, because at least audience members, when you enter the theater, if they happen to stop you, they're like, oh my gosh, it was such a great show, this. So the critics, I would honestly like to know as well, good or bad.
There we go.
I would just like to know. So,
but you wouldn't ever, but you wouldn't alter your performance because of a review.
No.
There we go. Okay.
Because yeah, it's just another person's opinion.
Exactly. Okay.
At first, I wasn't gonna read the review because I was like, I don't know how it works. I was like, should I read it? Uh-huh. Should I not? Should I wait? But I think I had to tell myself that, like, whatever I read, I'm not going to take it personally, because I know, like you said, that that's their perspective. And if it happened to be bad, you know, we're just going to leave it there. So they keep doing the show.
There we go.
You know? But when I read them, and they were like really good.
Glowing.
Like, hey. So, you know, I talked about it around the rehearsal room. So
awesome. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I read them. I like to read them, and I like to know exactly what show they saw.
Right. When did you come?
When did you come? And that was the night that, you know, and so, of course, you know, as an actor, you try to make every show as consistent as possible.
Right.
But all of them have their own little unique flavor.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so I'm always curious what the response is to that. But, yeah, I have to be prepared to not get... happy news.
Yeah, of course.
So my curiosity is like stronger than my, you know, maybe not wanting to see anything negative. So,
gotcha.
So I read them.
Okay, cool.
I do not read. I do everything I can to stay away from them. I may like kind of listen in if there's a conversation going on.
Right.
And, you know, I do know that our reviews have been positive.
Right.
And like maybe skim through one or two.
Okay.
But like, did not definitely. I definitely don't read them until I feel I'm ready and it's not going to get in my head.
Okay.
So like even positive reviews, like actually that might even be worse for me. Like just
interesting.
Get in my head. Like, it's a weird psychology.
Gotcha.
I just keep it out of my brain and just do.
Do you read them after closing?
Eventually, I end up reading them.
Okay, gotcha. Read
them and seeing, you know, what people said, but yeah, usually I just think.
Very cool. I always have the same mentality. I tell myself I'm not going to read them, but I always read them, you know? But that's just me. Ladies and gentlemen, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, every single week we have three segments. And the last one is the quest for the truth. And in this beautiful segment, we ask our guest a random question. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's from this here deck of cards. You know what I'm saying? Fate will roll the dice. And here we go.
I'm scared.
Actually, you guys pick.
Okay.
We pick our own card?
Let's do that. Everybody picks their own card. I normally do one card and everybody answers the same one, but we'll do that. It's very Squid Games. Nah, yeah. What's the other one? Is that what it's called?
Yeah,
Squid Okay, Games. Cool. Because my brain is all over the place. Also, if it's a bad one, we can change it because some of them suck.
Paul, you want me to pick yours?
Again, if it's not a good one, please feel free to tell me.
Okay. Are we answering?
And by not good, I mean like not interesting. If it's a risque question, you gotta answer.
Oh. Do you want us to answer our own question, or we each take turns answering each other's questions?
I feel like you don't like your question.
No, I know. I want to make sure.
I'll ask you your question.
Okay.
We'll go off that.
Yeah.
Okay? Let me see. Okay. And here we go. Oh, okay. Would you rather be rich or famous?
Rich.
Yeah. Okay. Why? Elaborate.
You could be famous for bad things.
That's so true.
I could be famous for being poor.
That's so true. I like that. Good answer.
And you know, I'd rather be financially successful. successful instead of wildly known.
True.
I can be, you know, comfortable without people knowing who I am.
Yeah,
but
for
still have some money in my pocket.
Yeah.
That's why I say rich, but I can say yes for both.
Okay, I like it, I like it. Okay, let's see. Okay. Would you rather explore space or the ocean? And why?
I feel like they're both scary. Maybe the ocean, if I had like some sort of super like protection.
Right. Here, like a little Spy Kids get up, you know?
Yeah, like
all
I
right.
I can like hide in the water. Like the sharks won't come and eat me and stuff.
All right.
I would want to explore the ocean because I feel like, one, there's so many hidden things in there that we don't know.
So true.
And I feel like it's just so vast. Like, we've only explored like a small percentage of the ocean.
I know.
So I'm like, what else is down there? The mermaids might scare me though.
True,
but
true.
I'll let
true,
you guys
true.
Know if they're down there.
All right, we'll have a second episode. We'll get an update, you know?
Yes.
Let's see what we got over here. Oh, this is a good one. This is a crowd pleaser. What mistake do you keep making over and over again? Shout out Nelly and Tim McGraw.
Over and over again.
There we go. We got that reference. There we go.
Okay, so related to theater. So, you know, my goal is to do a meaningful project once in a while. I have a family. I have a job. And I have lots of other responsibilities. And...
So theater is the Superman to your Clark Kent.
Yes, yes. It's certainly a passion, but not necessarily the thing that I'm doing to make ends meet.
Okay.
Right? Having said that, whenever I after doing a show, there's sort of that glow.
Yeah.
That you have, and then you start to forget how much work it is to do a project. And so... Say, oh, well, I'll audition and see, you know, what comes up. And then you get a nice project.
Right.
Okay, this will be really easy. I'll be able to have a great life balance. No problem. and then like...
What's that?
And
yeah.
Then
yeah.
You just... And then the show hits you and you're immersed and like all the normal things that you used to be able to do, you can't do anymore because you're 100% focused on this thing and it's intense. And yes, it's a joy, but I keep forgetting how challenging... doing a show is.
Oh yeah.
And I we were just talking the other day with some friends. This show in particular, Mlima's Tale, is one of the scariest shows I've ever done. It is so high octane that it's like jumping out of a plane every time we start the show.
Oh yeah, I believe
for me.
It.
Because it's so hard charging and so intense. And so, but you know, it's also awesome. So I guess that's the thrill in that we seek as artists as well. So,
Mom.
I want a new question.
Were you gonna wait till the last second?
I'm sorry. Is that? Do you like that question?
I mean, my answer would be Boy Meets World, but my answer is Boy Meets World to everything, honestly. We're going to change it. But for the record, it was, if you could live in a sitcom, which one would it be and why?
Oh, that's a great question.
All right, we'll keep it.
Do you have
one? Boy Meets World was actually...
No, you're fucking with me.
I'm dead serious.
No, you like Boy Meets World?
Totally, yeah.
Oh, dude, I have a joke for you later, man.
Yeah.
and I'm going to enjoy that joke later. I don't like this one. Okay. It's too personal. What opportunity for love or money have you given up? Do you regret it now?
Opportunity for love. That's a deep question.
Yeah, you should see the other one, man.
Jeez, yeah, should have kept Boy Meets World.
Yeah.
Well, I had an opportunity to answer a question about the
sitcom. Sabrina, the teenage witch. You did get a hard hitter.
I did get a hard hitter. I'm kind of regretting
it. Yeah, 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 me too.
For love or money, I think there's been like just some theater projects that I kind of said no to.
Okay.
That I really regret
saying no to.
Really?
And it wasn't necessarily a money thing.
Right.
I'm going to put it under the category of money because it would be career.
Right, of course.
But also love because of it just, there was one particular project that I let go of just because I was going through some things in life. And like, it related to me so much as a piece. Like, it hurt to say no to that. Like, just that I went, it was the first time I read a play and I was like, this is my family. This is my origins, everything. Like, this is us. And I really wanted to tell that story. But it just, again, life stuff, I ended up having to drop the project. So, that was really tough.
Wow. Great answers all around. You know what I'm saying? You guys let fate decide, and I appreciate it. How often do you guys find yourself finding a character or a project in which it was kind of like, oh, that puzzle piece that just fits in perfectly? And how often is it something where you have to mold from the very first day, and maybe it was a difficult task that you didn't really see yourself in the beginning, but at the end it was something that only you could have been that character?
There's been a few times where I've done a role and the show ended, and like, I've gone through my life and experiences that maybe that my character would have gone through, and I'm like, oh, I wish I could revisit that role.
Yeah.
You know, I would have made different choices. I would have done different things because now I've like experienced some of these things that I could apply to that role.
Right.
So there are moments like that. And then there's just roles where it's just like, oh, I'm nothing like that, but I really want to do it because it is far from who I am.
Right. Love a good challenge. Okay.
I would definitely say something similar. Like, I think life has a funny thing of putting you in a role where like you kind of needed to be in that role to teach you something about your own life, mm-hmm. or even to mirror to you like what's going on in your life. Like, I feel with this role, because it was so challenging, I feel like it was the only role that was fit for me right now. Like, I feel like I needed to do this play so that I can get over the personal things in my life, like my own self-limiting beliefs and like my own perspective of myself as an artist. Because like, I feel like this show, it makes you like a blank canvas so that you can be so many things, like a chameleon. So I think, even when I would do shows in college, like one time I played Satan, and I remember Kat Slavik, she cast
me. Big shout out Kat, prior guest, and co-star in Rapture Blister Burn. I'm a little biased. What's up?
Yeah, we did The Last Days with Judas Iscariot, and I was like, why'd you cast me as Satan? Like, I'm the complete opposite. And she was just like, no, you're gonna do a good job. And I loved that because it got me out of my comfort zone. It forced me to go to the extremes so that I could just like free myself.
Oh.
And also to like be able to give Satan a point of view.
Right.
And to not judge him. Right. I can't, you know?
Wow.
So yeah, I would say honestly, like all the roles coincidentally like helped me work on something for myself.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that roles find you. You know, and so I sort of take that fatalist kind of approach to it. Like, well, okay, I was meant to play this now, and just sort of find yourself within the role. One of the nice things too is as I've gotten older, I find myself kind of getting opportunities for juicier and juicier roles. That's the beautiful thing about acting is that it's one of the few art forms that rewards you for getting older.
So
know,
true.
With the added experience, yeah. And, you know, as long as you have the facility to be able to squeeze all the lines in your head and process it all, it can really bring you to kind of new places. So I enjoy it.
I'd say probably the role that impacted me the most was I did Miami Motel Stories back in 2018.
Okay.
With Juggernaut.
Shout out Juggernaut.
Shout out Juggernaut. Juan had written a piece for which he did a lot of research, and I found the story of a young gay young man who ended up prostituting himself on the street on Biscayne Boulevard back in the day, and in the 90s. And just getting into that role, and then it literally went from 0 to 100 once his mother comes into the room, and just their dynamic. And then it became not even about his sexuality. It became about two people who didn't know how to love each other. And just the boot camp of having to do that 9 times a night, and I had a great scene partner, Carrie Hart.
Oh, big shout out, Carrie Hart, prior guest.
She just directed Top Dog Underdog.
Yes.
So just that whole piece of just like literally just raw emotion, arguments, just like the whole thing was just so opening as an artist. It was probably the most challenging, but also the most rewarding acting experience I've had so far.
Wow.
Just because the repetition of doing it, and then Carrie's amazing. We like would literally give each other slightly different intentions every show. And it just, the scene just was never the same every single time. And that was what was so beautiful about it.
Yeah.
Blocking, you know, we got from point A to Z, but every single moment was just different. It was literally like learning how to catch a ball and throw it.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Because then you're having a blast. And if you're having a blast, the audience can tell that you're having a blast.
Not just having a blast. We were emotionally, I was emotionally broken after
every
time. And it was amazing to be wrecked that way.
Oh, man. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, wow, what an episode that we have had today. Can we please give it up for the cast of Malima's Tale? Guys, I thank you so much for dropping on by. Thank you guys so much. When I say that the door is always open to every single one of you, I truly mean it. And whatever productions or endeavors that you guys are in the future, please, like I said, slide in the DMs and we'll get something going for whatever production. We'll make it happen. I truly, truly appreciate you guys coming on the show. I congratulate you on a phenomenal run. You guys have, for lack of better words, blessed the South Florida audiences with a performance that will be remembered for years to come. A story, a poignant story, an important story to tell. Everybody put on phenomenal performances, so I congratulate every single one of you. I truly do. Of course. If you guys have any projects on the horizon, feel free to plug it and talk to me about social media. Where can people follow your journey? Follow all of that good stuff. You know, any projects that you have on your horizon, on your season, anything that you want to plug, feel free.
My next project is Footloose.
Okay.
With Slow Burn Theater.
Shout out Slow Burn.
The Broward Center. That'll be December 13th through January 1st.
Okay.
And I have Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok.
There we go. That diction.
Yes, you can find. I'm sure if you put in Jarell Brown, J-E-R-E-L, Brown.
Yeah.
And any of those.
You see it on the screen.
You'll find me.
You see it on the screen. You know what I'm saying? Shout out the editor out here. He's a wizard. Talk to me.
I have no upcoming projects just yet, but you can follow me on Instagram, Facebook as Sydney Presendu. I have a TikTok as Sydney Prez.
Okay.
And YouTube if you want to.
There we go. Yeah. All of them. Okay. Got the YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. All right. Awesome.
Yeah, no projects for me as yet.
Not yet. By the time this airs, man, you guys got a whole season booked, let's be honest, you know?
Yes, but my daughter Melanie's getting married in December.
Wow, congratulations. Wow.
And if I survive that, then on the
yeah, that's a whole production in itself, yeah, man. Yeah. What are you talking about? You got a whole season lined up.
Are we invited? If you can make it to Curacao, you know, maybe.
Woo!
We'll get there. By the way.
So yeah, but you can follow me on Instagram and friend me on Facebook.
Okay, very
Paul
cool.
Tour as well.
And you see it on the screen.
I am going to be doing a Christmas production called Old Christmas Tree with Thinking Cap Theater.
Shout out Thinking Cap. Okay.
So yeah, check that out. It's gonna be obviously during Christmas time. So
okay,
it's gonna be fun.
Yeah. Very cool.
And I just have Instagram. So it's i.m.philip_andrew. I know that's complicated. I'm sorry.
But that's why you see it on the screen. You know what I'm saying? That's why you see it on the screen, ladies and gentlemen. Wow. Again, thank you so much, every single one of you. Whenever you guys want to come back, the door is always open to every single one of you. And you guys, ladies and gentlemen, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Every Thursday at midnight, you check out a brand new episode. You know what I'm saying? You go on Apple Podcasts, on Deezer, on Spotify, on all that good stuff. But more than anything, you go on YouTube. That's why we got 72 damn cameras in here. So you don't only listen to our voices, our smooth, velvety-like voices. You know what I'm saying? You also get to see the visuals, the effects, all that good stuff. You know what I'm saying? Ladies and gentlemen, every Thursday at midnight, you know what it is. Holla.
Bye.
You can say how you feel.